Well, my name is Willa Hiltner, and I was born down here in Wenatchee. How many people do we have here from this part of the world?
I live here. But...
Yes. You're all from other parts of the country. And my father was from Nebraska.
Where?
Well, he was from Butler County in Surprise, a little town called Surprise. And he and his twin brother worked their way through law school by coming out and working in the Alaska Gold Rush. And they went through this little town down here, and it was all sagebrush, and it was dust in the summer and mud in the winter. And you wonder how anyone could see that it was going to be a beautiful garden spot with irrigated orchards as it is today, where they send out like 30,000 cars of apples every year. After a series of jobs and, you know, kind of backing and filling like many young people do to get started, took over the local newspaper. And he had it. He published the paper for 30 years. And then when he died, my brother published it, and that was almost 35 years ago. So we've always had a newspaper in the family. Well, how does it feel to have a newspaper in the family? Well, in the first place, one of the fun things about it is, instead of learning to sew and cook to grow up, you go down and you work in the files and you work in the typewriters. And your children may develop all these good housewifely skills, but you don't develop them. And this gets you out of all kinds of the proper, you know, housewifely stand. So I worked in the newspaper from the time I was 13. And at that time, the newspaper business was typing on non-electric typewriters. And then the type would go to an editor who would write the headlines. Then it would go to a linotyper. How many people have seen a linotype? They were a great, huge machine that made lots of noise, and it was used for many years to make hot metal slugs, that they called them. And each line came out, heated up and pressed out, and then they would put all these pieces together on a flat, big flat plate, and it formed a page. And then they would put it through what they call the stereotyping process. And that would, you'd have a piece of cardboard pressed on this flat plate, and then they'd steam it down and make what they called a mat. And then for each big page of a newspaper. Have you been through this? Anybody been through a newspaper office? So you've seen, you're familiar with this process. And then they would take this mat, and it would bend. And then they would put it in another big round, about the size of this table, and pour hot metal on top of this imprinted cardboard. And that made a plate. And this round plate would go on the press. And so each page had to go through about these five processes. And then there was a very noisy big press that would grind out the newspapers. Well, along came offset. Do y'all know what offset is? Well, offset is putting the print first on a rubber roller, and then that rubber roller goes onto the newsprint, and that's why it's called offset. And they discovered that they could photograph a page that was all like this, for instance. And make a very thin plastic sheet and put that directly on the press. And then as it went around, it would go on a rubber roller, and then the rubber roller would go on the paper. And this completely changed the newspaper business. And then as computers came in, instead of using paper to type, you know, sit there and type, you use a terminal. Are you all familiar with the computer business and you write your story on the terminal, and you see it on a screen in front of you, and then if you press the right button, it goes to the right place. If you press the wrong button, you lose it. And this process has really revolutionized the whole printing business. It used to be that in the summertime, the stereotyping and linotyping rooms would be very hot. You know, people would just perspire and there wasn't air conditioning. But now, it's carpet on the floor and it's sort of like your living room. And they now they just cut and paste to make a newspaper sheet. And pretty soon, they have a new process where you don't even have to cut and paste. You do it all by pressing buttons on a computer. And this makes it much faster to turn out the newspaper. There have been much changes in the newspaper business. Tell me a little bit about what you read in your newspaper. What do you expect when you pick up your newspaper? What do you think about? You're closest to me, so.
You know, the first thing I read, the obituary, see if I'm still alive.
Well, that's worth it. That's worth it. What do you read? What do you read?
Headlines, first page.
Yeah.
I guess that's probably true, too.
Headlines, what do you read?
First page.
First page? Page one.
Yeah, first page.
Uh-huh. And how about you?
I don't read the paper anymore.
Oh, I see. Well, that's easy. I tell you all about it, and you don't have to.
How did your father learn this business?
Yes.
I mean, just the processing of that early processing is what I first saw, you know, years and years ago.
Yes.
And I wondered, how did they learn the processing business? Did they learn that back in Nebraska? Or?
Oh, no. There was a printing press already there. Originally, they had what they call flatbed presses before they had this rotary press that I described. And the flatbed presses was just taking all your type and putting it in a flat piece, and then that you'd put that, had a rotary wheel that rolled over the top of it. And that did the printing. And that original papers were that particular type. You know, originally this moving printing was actually invented by the Chinese way before Gutenberg's Bible, and it was the, you know, Marco Polo came along and saw what they were doing, and we recently in Seattle had a Chinese exhibit, and they had some of you been.
Mm-hmm.
And did you see the printing, the early printing press? Of course, if you're Chinese, you have to have some kind of printing that could write all those characters. But they have at that time itinerant printers who came around and worked a while, you know, and knew their business. It was they called them jobbers, and it was a skill like carpentry or plumbing or whatever.
But they had a knowledge of it, and something they wanted to do, so they got in and
learned. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, these in this day and age, there are very few new newspapers started, and there are very few newspapers that are owned locally, because they are the way the tax laws are. It's a great advantage for newspaper chains to come into a small town and buy up a newspaper, and they get a tax write-off on that. Mm-hmm. And you'll find that the chains are becoming larger and larger. I couldn't tell whether somebody was going to say something or the baby was burping. Formerly, in the 60s, the newspapers were interested in the me generation, and at that time, we had the rise of the Dear Abby column and all the columns on how to live your life, and at this point, they've done surveys for the 80s, and it turns out that most of the people are interested in what they call hard news. You still want to get your grocery, clip out your coupons for the grocery store, but they're interested in, you know, what's going on in the world. Now, tell me, let's have a show of hands. How many think that the newspapers that you read are fair? I mean, do you think that you read a biased newspaper, or do you think you're local? What do you think about your newspaper that you read?
Well, I don't think they're fair to a certain extent in some of what they...
What do you think?
Well, it seems each newspaper sort of follows either Republican or Democrat. I think ours is Republican. Tri-City Herald.
What do you
think? He reads more newspaper
than I do. I'm on the sports page first, see what the puppies are doing.
very good.
I don't know, it's crossword too to see if they check if he misses us.
Well,
ours tend to be a bias.
You think so?
Like our San Diego morning paper is definitely biased to Republican. And then play that up.
So that what you get. Now, do you like this or do you not like this?
I have been told that if you want to get unbiased news, you should read the Christian Science Monitor.
Yes, or...
How about USA Today, that new...
Well, yes, but now this is a phenomenon of the 80s, the rise of USA Today, and the I think the New York Times also has a national edition. And this is a complete new... concept of newspapering, and apparently it's been very fairly successful. How many have seen copies of USA Today? Ah, and do you read it? Do you buy it?
I get about once a week anyway, just see what's going on throughout the country.
Yes. Now this was possibly the first, large nationwide publishing effort that was made, and that's one of the new trends, is this national newspaper. This one of the reasons that this is possible is because of this offset printing. They send the whole thing over the telephone wires, and by satellite, and then have their presses at various sections of the country, and just roll them off. Another new trend is the ease of color. Printing. You notice how much color USA Today has. And part of the reason is because they have new processes that will make this easy. All the color prints that you see in the newspaper has to go through three what they call separations. One yellow, one red, and one blue. And then, of course, they have the black ink. And it has to go, so it has to be run three times. But they can do that so fast, and they do it so well that you really, it's almost as easy as printing in black.
I think that's why we don't have more local stories, because it's so easy to get all this junk off of the teletype, isn't it?
Yes.
And it takes more effort to write local stories.
There has been another big trend. And that is the rise of the community newspaper. How many have a community newspaper in your neighborhood? Mm-hmm. And you read it?
Sure.
Read it. And many of them, now does it also carry national news or just local?
Local
stuff. And this is because you have these national newspapers that don't have your local things. We have one. I live in the University District in Seattle, and we have the University Herald that pretty much mirrors what has happened to newspapers. The University Herald started out as a local paper owned by a single individual, and then he sold it to a chain, and the chain took it and tried to make it into a large area newspaper that didn't have the local stuff in it, and just about wrecked it, and now it's back in another ownership where, if there's something about my tennis club, why I take that down to the local newspaper, or promotion for the local charities, and then it's also very good advertising media if you want to sell your refrigerator. There's another new trend in newspapers, and that is that more and more you see in your newspaper an insert with your local grocery ad or your local Sears story, and these inserts come by the truckload. They aren't printed locally at all, and they come by the by the truckload and are inserted in the paper with a, there's a machine that that folds them in. All the newspapers go through this, the folding machine that that puts them in. And that is a more economical than printing it locally.
But that's a nuisance. What? You open that paper and you've got about umpteen of those sheets, and then you've got to clean them out before you can even start
well, that's the right.
The news. I don't enjoy those at all.
Well, it gets them out. What were you going to say?
Our newsboy has to put all those inserts
in.
You do. Now, what newspaper is that?
That's Tacoma.
Oh, yes. The Herald Tribune?
Tacoma News Tribune.
Oh, yes.
He puts in the inserts.
Well, they also have to do that in the Seattle papers. Now the Wenatchee newspaper, they all come, they have a new machine. It's new this year. And it runs them all through and puts all the inserts in. So that the boys, that the news people here have. Were you going to say something else?
No.
Oh, just brushing the fly.
Yeah.
Right. Now the thing that's unique about the newspaper in this area, how many have seen copies of the Wenatchee World? There's one down in the reading room in the library. It's very handy to the ice cream place. And they have, they cover, it's a regional newspaper. They cover four counties. Their circulation is small by metropolitan standards. It's only about 32,000. But the area that they cover is, half the size of Massachusetts. It goes to the Canadian border and west to the Cascades and east past Grand Coulee Dam, you know, about two-thirds of the way to Spokane, and south to Columbia Basin area. And these, I think they figured out that the motor truck drivers run enough miles to take you around the world every day. The newsboys have what they call, as your newspapers in Tacoma and probably Iowa, they're called independent businessmen, and they figure they collect your subscription rate and they buy the papers and they're responsible for their own routes, but the motor routes, I think, are employed personnel, and there are lots of motor routes in this area because the places of homes are so far apart. And they also can get the newspaper. It's still cheaper to get it by mail. I get my Wenatchee World in Seattle. It comes in the mail, and it's about 2 days late. But I usually read it because I want to hear what's going on in Wenatchee. It's here, know what's going on. There are another trend is that they used to have a big pictures of brides, and the big newspapers. Now the Tacoma paper doesn't take. Does that still take brides, wedding news?
I don't think so.
Couples.
What?
Couples. Yeah.
Couples that are married.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
But no full length.
Yeah, they used to do that. It used to be a big deal, and now they. They still do it in Wenatchee, and they'll print a couple's, you know, picture. But the trend is more toward how to live your life, you know, in the women's page and lifestyle type of thing.
But in small town community papers, I suppose that's still the brides and the wedding pictures are the most important part. Almost.
Oh yes, and the obituaries.
I can just remember when I grew up in North Dakota in a small town that the page with all the weddings in it was, I mean, that was a real big deal. I mean, you just looked at that, you know, that was something you went to.
Well, it was a special part of your wedding was getting their picture in the paper.
Right.
Now the Dubuque paper puts in weddings once a month.
Uh-huh.
All the previous month.
And that's
kind of nice too. You don't have them every day in the paper.
Yes.
But our local paper, of course, has it once a week.
And that you aren't interested, why you can
just leaf over.
Leaf over. Well, that's one advantage of your insets advertising. You can pull it all out and not worry about it. Now the trend in television. Do you all sit and watch television? Are you all TV experts?
Right. No, I like to.
Good. This is, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the rise of Channel 5 in Seattle. This is a typical of what happens to a television station. It's owned by Dorothy Bullitt. Her father was in the real estate business, and in 1 year, and also her husband was, and in 1 year they both died, and here she was, a young widow, and she had to make a living. So she kept on with the real estate business. Well, there was one small radio station that owed them money in one of her rental accounts. And they owed so much money that in order to get back her investment, that she had to take over the radio station. And it was also the beginning of the TV industry. There were some powerful captains of industry around the Seattle area, and they sort of looked down on Dorothy Bullitt, and they said, well, you know, we'll let her have that one channel. She can. So she started this TV station, Channel 5, and right away she became interested in making it a community affair, and she started community programs. There was one that had a rabbi, a Catholic priest, and a Methodist minister who discussed religion, you know, every day. And then there was one program that took turns with all the different charitable organizations where they could come and tell what they were about. She had to, her channel got bigger and bigger, and she had to go back to Washington, D.C. and fight for her license. Hmm. And at one time, the Hearst people loaned her some money, and so they had about a quarter interest. And when she was back in Washington, D.C., she got wind of the fact that the other people who wanted her channel were going to bring up the fact that, well, here was Hearst newspapers, and you know about Hearst newspapers and how awful they were, and you wouldn't want them to, have an interest in this TV station. So she went right out, took a train or plane over to New York, and went to the Hearst people and said, "Look, I'm going to have trouble with my license, and can I buy back quick your interest in my paper?" Which she did. And so when she got back to the licensing commissions, their argument that she was partly controlled by this newspaper chain was no longer valid, and she kept her license. And that was one of the funny businesses that goes on behind the scenes in the license. When we got in Channel 9, which is our education station in the Seattle area, Dorothy Bullitt provided all their equipment as a donation. And she's still, she's about 90, I think, now, and has, part of her family is in the business, but she still owns the station and is greatly respected in the community and has managed to hold her own in the midst of a pretty much of a dog-eat-dog situation. What kind of programs do you watch in the TV? Are you serials or daytime serials, or do you watch, do you have an education channel that you
that's what I only turn on, Channel 9.
Yeah. Well, I do too.
Programs.
PBS.
Yes. Yes. Do you have an education channel where you are?
We have Channel 9.
Yes?
But why can't we have more local programming? We have three channels in our area, the Tri-Cities, and they all pick up the network programs, all the soaps and the reruns and the news, and that's about the extent of it. There's hardly any, community interest programs.
All right. It's strictly profit. Absolutely. If there were any profit in local programs, that would be there. You have, and this is true also in the newspaper business. Now, my father was a product of this small town in Nebraska where they didn't even have a pool hall. And he was very much against the demon rum. And all through the whole history of the Wenatchee paper, they have never taken liquor ads, not even for beer. And during the Depression, this was, well, he might have been tempted. He didn't talk about it, but there weren't very many. I remember once the Olympic beer people came and said, well, you know, you really should take the beer ads because this is, you know, beer doesn't have so much alcohol in it as some of the hard liquor. But this was strictly his conscience. It wasn't for profit. And when you have businessmen who do things for their conscience, you have a better product. And sometimes you have TV stations with people like Dorothy Bullitt who will put in community programs even when it hurts them financially. So if you could go to your station and figure out, you know, how they can make a profit out of a local program, then I'm sure they'd use it. Yes?
Do you think that the TV stations are overstaffed? Sometimes the programs are put on and they have a whole minute of the cast that can place the assistants to the producer and the assistant for lighting and the...
Yes.
I don't know what it's all about, but it seems to me that that perhaps is one of the reasons of the high cost of TV time.
You can be sure that if there wasn't the bottom line profit there, that that the staff would be cut. They're getting enough advertising to pay the cost.
And isn't it? Don't they have to be recognized? Isn't there such a thing as everybody's name has to be shown?
I don't know about that.
I don't know either. I just wonder.
I think maybe maybe they won't have to pay them so much if they put their name on. there is a very often in the newspaper business, if you get a byline, you are willing to accept less money because your ego is massaged. The one main thing about the Wenatchee newspaper is that it's famous all over the this part of the country anyway for having backed Grand Coulee Dam back in when my father was first had it in the time of the First World War. He was not part of the local establishment, and the local establishment decided that they wanted a newspaper that would put down what they wanted said. It was the people who had the local bank and the local big irrigation district. So they went to Seattle and got a new editor, and they came over to Wenatchee, which is a little town, and published a newspaper at the same hour of the day, a daily newspaper. And they got the local merchants to advertise in that paper. So the thing that my father did was to branch out in the area, and he left one man in the office, and he got in his Ford car. I think he had the first Ford sedan in town, and he made this a mobile office. And he would go into a town like Chelan down here, over the old sandy winding road, and go to the local merchants association or chamber of commerce, and say, I represent the Wenatchee paper, and I'd like to write stories about your town. And would you endorse me so I can go down the different merchants and get advertising, and we'll see if we can't put Chelan on the map. And they would do this, and then he would go to the stores and sell advertising. He'd write about the town. He'd sell subscriptions. And there were about 30 towns around in North Central Washington, and he went to each of these. And that's the way he stayed alive, by being focusing on the little country villages. The rival, all this time he never mentioned the rival newspaper in his columns, so that the people outside of town didn't know that there was a rival newspaper. And after 4 years, he organized a trek, a motorcade, for a goodwill motorcade from the Chamber of Commerce to from Wenatchee up north to the Canadian border. So here were all these Wenatchee people in their Ford cars going up through the sandy hills and stopping at each town. And when they went at the post office, here were the Wenatchee Worlds, which was the name of the newspaper, being read, and everybody knew the editor. His name was Rufus Woods. And nobody had heard that there was another paper in Wenatchee. And this was actually the beginning of the end for the rival newspaper. They discovered that that they actually couldn't really make money when they couldn't get patronage outside of town. And the newspaper has focused ever since on serving the public outside of Wenatchee. They have a building and a branch in Okanagan, which is over the way, that-a-way, and another branch in Moses Lake, I think, there with an advertising staff and a reporter and a circulation person that gets subscriptions. When I was growing up, I was at one stage of the career what they call North Central Washington editor. And each of these little towns had a housewife or a man, somebody in town who wrote local news. You know, Mrs. Zilch has new carnations today. And it was my job to edit the local news and put a headline on it. And then they would measure this by the inch. And I think they were paid, I believe it was 15 cents an inch. for these local news. And then there was a North Central Washington page, and each day you had took something that was very special happening and made a headline. And this gave the people in the small towns a feeling that their local news was important. And there were a few glitches that I made. I remember once a Coulee City down here was having a big tourist promotion, and I wrote a headline that said, Coulee City, you know, crooks fingers at tourists. Well, instead of setting it in two lines, you know, it was supposed to be Coulee City, crooks fingers at tourists. Why, they set it instead of in three lines, they set it in two lines. So it came out, Coulee City, crooks fingers at tourists. and the Coulee City people were not amused at all. And the thing that I think the first thing I heard about here were all these telephone calls, cancel my subscription.
We still get news from in our county paper that way. I mean, we have ladies
you
in the
send
different
in.
Towns that
yes.
send in news. Mm. That's to our county paper.
Yes, well, they now have paid correspondents in the different areas.
Well, I'm sure they're paid, too.
Oh, yes. They're paid. They have a variety of people who roam around the country. We have one former managing editor who reached the retirement age and decided he wanted to have fun instead of, you know, come to work at a particular time. So his name is Hugh Blanc. I don't know whether you're from this part of the world. And so he goes around North Central Washington writing stories about people or whatever he feels like. And they get really very good, what they call human interest stories about unusual people in the area. Another thing that the newspaper does is to try to have some constructive local story on the newspaper each day. And they have a very good color press. And so they usually have a color picture on the front of the page each day with some local business. And they try to put the murders and the big fights and the wars and, you know, all the blood and gore on someplace beside the front page, unless it's very startling and they can't, you know, somebody shoots the mayor and that has to be on the front page. But but usually there's that effort. Now, this is in contrast with many big city papers who try very hard to find how much sensational gossip type stuff that they can do. And many of you have seen in your grocery store the National Enquirer and what's the other paper that really works hard to find the sensational. There have been a few libel suits throughout the years. Once there was a mayor who dipped into the till, and I can remember very vividly the newspaper published their findings, and he sued for libel. And this was a sort of an anxious time, because you don't really know what a jury is going to do when you get in a spot like that. Now, how long do we? It's 11:30. Yes.
Excuse me. In this connection, I'd like to raise the question of the insensitivity of the news media in approaching individuals and grilling them.
Yes.
And putting words in their mouth and then coming out of the newspaper. I have a number of very vivid illustrations of a girl that was raped, and what they did to that girl was just unbelievable and unmerciful. Another case, a teenager in which they almost made him a kook and a drunk, which he was not. Now that's personally, I know that that's going on all the time. Insensitivity of the news media, what are they doing with our politicians, you see?
Yes.
Words in their mouth. Insensitivity is not an objective report of actually what's going on.
Yes.
What's your reaction to that?
Yes, well, you'll find this depends entirely on the management of the newspaper.
But they all do it. I put them all under that classification.
Well,
I find a newspaper that doesn't do it.
There's an article, a little proverb that says, "What is it? All generalities are false, including this one."
Well, then give me a suggestion to a newspaper that doesn't do it.
Yes. Well, do you think?
So I think public radio, all things considered, for Minnesota is very. They don't have all these advertisements. They have more time for. And more background of the news.
Yes, and that. You have reporters are, there's some good ones and there's some not good ones, and particularly if you've had a personal incident or you know something that this has happened to, then you become negatively conditioned and it makes a very strong impression on you. And one of the things that the press does, and I have a booklet here that they have, they do research in what people think about them. Go on. Where do we
start? Until 11:50, almost.
Okay, all right. Well, any of you can leave any time you want to, you know, if you get tired of sitting. This is a report that the United States Newspaper Association has commissioned an individual research organization to put out. This was commissioned by the American Society of Newspaper Editors, and it's funded by the United Press, and it's conducted by this particular research organization. And they have gone in and asked readers what they think, like people like you, about the newspapers, and you'd be interested in some of the things that they've come out. This is called Relating to Readers in the 80s, and there are four major themes, and the first one is the readers particularly like local news, and they also feel that there's a perception of a gulf between them and the editors. They don't feel that. Now this is for the editors, so they can work on this. And it says, now this calls it an existence of a new social contract between the readers and the editors. You as readers expect the editors to give you some hard news so that you can make judgments of what's going on in the world or how you want to run your life. That the editors have a responsibility to give you world and national news. without bias, so that you can judge for yourselves whether they, your particular one does is a, no a question. It was, they also, the reader, these readers, perceive that the newspapers fail to respond to the reader's search for self-fulfillment. You know, how do I, this is part of the new trend in giving me something that I can do to improve my life. So, you know, my husband is stepping out with somebody else. What do I do? They look to the newspapers to write to dear Abby or Ann Landers, and you know, what? I've got a crisis. Help! Help! In the 80s, here are some of the changes that have taken place. There have been new special sections, and there have been new these lifestyle features on how we run our life. And part of this, I think, is because the church used to do this for us, and our social group used to do this for us, but with our mobile society, many of us are alienated or new in the community, and we don't have all this network of help. And there are more service and advice columns, sections centering on me or you. And then, of course, there's a color explosion, like in the national newspapers particularly. You have your pictures in color now. And it also mentions the introduction of these two new national newspapers, USA Today and the national edition of the New York Times. Here's what they're interested in, what this research group has found out. It says, this sums up the change from the world of the 70s to the world of 74. In the 70s, we were interested in Iran and Lebanon and El Salvador and Three Mile Island, remember that? And the Times Beach, I don't know what that was, and the national debt. And now we're interested in the MX missiles. Are you? Were they right? Poland? That was fairly recently. Are you interested in the Middle East? Inflation? That's number one. This is what I'm interested in. And pesticides. And interest rates. And unemployment. And they've changed, and this helps your editors who are putting in all this, stuff, if they read it, if they pay attention to it, focus on what their readers are interested in. And another thing, now the Wenatchee newspaper sends a questionnaire to all their readers every year, and sends out, what do you read, which of the columns that you read. My brother, who publishes a newspaper, has a little column called In Our Own World that starts on the front page. And they gave him a lot of razzing because he didn't get a very high readership. Right now, I'm filling out a questionnaire that I get from the Seattle Times, who comes in about every couple of weeks, and it tells, what they want to know, what I think about everything in the paper. And in order to encourage me to fill this out, every time I send in my questionnaire, I get a free coffee cup.
Oh!
that says, read the New York Times. So they fill.
You can have a whole set.
Yes. Now here is here's what they think about the sensationalism that you were talking about. 81% agree that television sensationalizes news to make it interesting.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, all right, okay. That 81% of the people feel in this survey feel the same as you do. And on the other hand, only 52% feel that the newspapers sensationalize the news to make it interesting. It pointed out another point, that 57% of the men and women believe that news coverage in newspapers is often influenced by advertisers. Now, do you feel that? You have this? Does anybody here think that the advertisers influence the news columns? don't worry so much about that. It used to be that the advertisers had more influence on the news columns than at the moment, because as the newspapers get bigger, they aren't so dependent on one advertiser. If an advertiser doesn't like what's in the newspaper, he can go to another newspaper, you know, or he can send it out through the mail. Yes?
Are the advertisers influenced by the number of subscribers they have or the circulation they have?
There is a national organization called the Audit Bureau of Circulation, and this guarantees that to the advertiser that this number of newspapers will be delivered. However, there's another whole class of newspapers, and that's what they call the free throwaways. You probably all get them.
John Nichols.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these, while the advertising rates are a little lower because they do not subscribe to this, what they call Audit Bureau of Circulation, I get one in my neighborhood. You have to take it on faith that this newspaper will be delivered to so many people. Well, sometimes you pay your news, the little boys or girls who deliver them aren't paid very much. And sometimes instead of delivering them, why, they'll just put them in the nearest dumpster, you know, they can't get such high there is no guarantee that they'll get where they're supposed to get. But that is, the rates are based on this guaranteed delivery. And it's the advertising that pays for the newspaper. The subscription is a small percentage. Although nowadays the subscription just about pays for the paper, because the price of paper has gone up and up and up and up. At one time during the war, there was a great shortage of newsprint because everything was going into the war effort. So, the newsprint manufacturers were saying, we can't get wood. So at one time, the Wenatchee World staff, the editor, all the reporters and their family, went out to the woods to cut lumber to send to the newspaper manufacturers, and they took great pictures of it. How we're helping the war effort by all going out and cutting the lumber. Of course, this was kind of their professional crew had probably done a pretty good job before they got there, but made a wonderful story about how we are providing the.
Well, it's nice that we can recycle the newspapers since we get such an abundance of all this stuff.
Yes. Now in my town, the nearly every corner has a big wooden box, and you try to send your newspaper to your favorite charity. My church collects them, and it finances the youth program. And so I haul my newspapers to my church. It would be much more convenient to take them out to the corner. But I want the church to have them so that they'll finance theirs.
How does it work now that some of these, take Pay and Save and hand, these big concerns, the mailman drops them off now.
Yeah.
We get ours.
Oh, yes.
At Stillicum from, yes. From the mailman. Now.
Yes. An enterprising, the Pay and Save Corporation has, you know, Lamont, it has a whole bunch of stores, and they have determined that it's cheaper for them to send it through the third class mail, mm-hmm. than to pay the newspaper, mm-hmm. the advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Now when this happens, now there are, why then they send it through direct mail. And this is one of the competitors, yeah?
Do the giant lumber corporations like Boise Cascade and
mm-hmm.
Weyerhaeuser
mm-hmm.
have influence on what goes into the papers?
No. Not at all.
Not at all.
The only influence they might have in your government is giving money to the governor's campaign. But they they're interested in selling their newsprint And there are some newspapers who own their source, are big enough to own their source of newsprint. And they recently had a great big law case on price fixing against some of the big paper suppliers. And the Wenatchee World was one of the plaintiffs. There was a whole bunch of newspapers. They were supposed to be sealed bids on who provided the best price. And there was collusion, and the suppliers got together and jacked up the price. And this was, I think the plaintiffs won on that one. But there's no, it's too far from the source of influence.
Well, it's been interesting.
Well, thank you, and thank you for coming, and if you're interested in seeing any of these, what these look like, why, stick around.
I went through a paper.
Thank you. All right.